I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hear this, right now.
Welcome.
Primetime with Isaac and Suk.
What is going on up here?
I never know, man.
Unbiased.
Shut your mouth.
Uncompromised sports talk without the sugarcoating.
I hope you're happy. You wasted everyone's life for 30 seconds.
Isaac Ropp and Jason Sukanik.
Now shut up and let me do my job.
The best in sports coverage.
This is going to be great.
This is Primetime with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
Ahoy, fine people of the Portland metropolitan area.
Hello.
Don't forget to Southwest Washington and really wherever you're listening to us.
Norway. Could be all over the country.
Yeah, there's some dude in Norway that listens to us on a ham radio for all I know. Like he always said, I'm assuming he still listens. I don't think we've gotten a Christmas card from him in a while, but he used to pick us up. For whatever reason, people out in Scandinavia can always get us like on ham radios, and we'll get like emails, and this one guy.
You have to go super far north, and you can somehow get the signals.
Yeah, go over the pole or something, and some guy used to send us weird Christmas cards of him and his dog and saying that he listened to us, and I don't think he speaks very solid English.
I also am not certain he listens to listen. I think he listens and then tells you what he heard, and most of it's commercials.
Yeah, pretty much. But I don't think he's listening to our hot Pac-12 breakdowns. But either way, wherever you're listening, hopefully you're not laboring on this Labor Day, but maybe you're driving back through town or you're running some honey to-do list kind of items, or I don't know, maybe you're out playing golf. We've got you covered today. Full show of 3 to 7. No Isaac Ropp because he is not laboring today. I don't really know where Ropp is, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, I have no idea either. He said he might be able to show up and then didn't show up.
I'm assuming golf is involved. Like 80 degrees outside, right?
And I think my guess is he had to go to a wedding.
Ooh, wedding, huh?
I think that's what I remember hearing through the grapevine.
Do people get married on Labor Day?
I think people get married any time of year.
Huh. Well, I get summer weddings, but Labor Day, although I suppose having your wedding on Labor Day kind of works because A, you would always remember when it was, so you don't have to worry about the pesky anniversary, and two, I'm assuming that like most people have the day off, so you could show up at the wedding.
Yeah.
Right? It'd be easy for friends and family to get there.
Yeah, I think it kind of goes both ways because I had a friend, one of my good friends from Syracuse, got married on Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
And I couldn't go because I had a family pre-planned vacation that had already been booked because it was Memorial Day.
Does anyone really want to go to a wedding? Have you ever wanted to attend a wedding in your life?
Yes, the one in Turks and Caicos I went to this year.
Oh, that's true. Destination wedding.
That was fun.
Did you have to pay for it or did they like help out with the ticket at all?
No, I paid for the plane ticket.
Yeah.
But
did they take care of lodging or was it a whole?
No, I paid for lodging.
Okay. So basically you just got a trip to Turks and Caicos,
yes.
Which you could have done on your own. This just gave you like a reason.
Well, I mean, remember the room was being shared between 6 people. So the cost of the room was a lot less. And the
stayed with 6 other people in a room.
Well, there was multiple bedrooms in the place we were.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
So I was gonna say, that's a little weird, to be honest with you. At some point you stop splitting rooms. And I feel like that's like 24, 25, where the idea of splitting a room no longer applies.
Oh, yeah. There were bedrooms. It had a kitchen. It was basically like an extended stay type of style room,
sure.
But just in a resort. So it was nice. But I paid for that and I paid for the flight. But most of everything else was fairly covered because it was a wedding and there was events and all that kind of stuff. So it was nice. It was fun.
Yeah. Because I always wonder that, like if someone invites you to a destination wedding, what if it's a destination that you really don't want to go to? Because I got a buddy of mine who's he's getting serious with a gal who's from Colombia. And it's just like in the back of my mind, I'm like, look, I know that if this goes down, you're going to want me there. Don't really know if I want to burn vacation to go to Colombia, you know, because then that's one of those two that I don't expect him to pay for. You can't like destination weddings unless you're just loaded. Everyone's on the hook for their own ticket. I assume. I don't know anyone that's wealthy enough that's like, hey, we've got your ticket. We've got your lodging. Come on out. It's always like, hey, we'd like you to come. But, you know, I'm assuming a plane ticket to Colombia, probably $1,000. Anytime you're flying internationally, just assume it's between $700 and $1,000.
Mine was $700,
yeah.
Which I was actually pleased with. I was like, $7? Okay.
Sure. Yeah, right. Sure. That's just the going rate, right? Yeah. It's wherever you fly. And then, I don't know, like, I've got my blow budget when I get down there. I'm assuming it's going to be a little cheaper than the Coke here, but, you know, I figured a couple $100s. You never know. A couple $100 for that, you know, and then lodging. It's just an expensive trip. And if I'm taking like a week's vacation or 4 or 5 days, and then I'm going to burn a couple grand, no offense to Colombia, but, you know.
I think it depends on the level of friend as well.
Can we get married somewhere else?
Can you do a Colombian ceremony and then an American ceremony?
Well, I think there's one of those, but I think that's the whole point is like they want you at the destination. It's like, hey, this is where we're getting married. And my point is get married somewhere nicer.
I'm sure that where they're getting married is nice.
No. I'm going to go out on a limb and look, this is a sweeping, ugly American statement. And I try not to do this because I love other countries. I love seeing different cultures. I love experiencing it. I don't, whenever I travel, I don't just do the resort. Like that to me is a waste of time. The all-inclusive resort and you never leave. I don't like that, right? Just give me a cab, put me in the middle of the city and let's figure out what's going on, right? It's a raw opportunity. You don't know what's going to happen. And no offense to Colombia, but A, I don't want to get murdered. And two, that's not really
A and two.
Yeah.
Look at you changing it up.
I don't really want to immerse myself in everything that Colombia has to offer. It's just, it's not high on my list of places. So I just think if you're doing a destination wedding, it's upon you to make sure that destination is a place that other people will want to go. Like if I had a destination wedding and like it was in Delaware, like we're going to Delaware. Who wants to come to Delaware?
Now,
no.
For our wedding, because it was in New Jersey, it's not really a destination wedding, but for people out here, it wasn't exactly convenient. We paid for the groomsmen and the bridesmaids who lived away.
Yeah.
We paid for their flights to get to the wedding. Mm. But beyond that, it was on everybody else to pay for hotels and all that kind of stuff. And we had like a block of rooms, so there was a lower rate for people to stay at the hotels that we reserved. But yeah.
Weddings are dicey because, again, depending on the level of friendship, you kind of feel obligated. Like, and this is a level of friendship that I feel, because I've posed this question because I feel like it's coming, right? I don't know for certain, but I'm assuming at some point next year, if I'm a betting man, that's going down. And I've been asking around, I'm like, what's my obligation to go to Colombia? Can I just politely decline? Do I claim hardship?
Well, you should start planning trips now that will interfere with said wedding. Try to get a feel for when the wedding might be going down.
Yeah.
You know, how hot is it in Colombia in the summer? My guess is scorching. So maybe they'll do it in the fall or winter to make it a little bit more manageable. So, you know, plan yourself a trip with the family in the winter around where you think it might happen. And when the invite comes, hey, sorry, I've already planned this trip.
So basically what you're saying is I need to have real and fake trips planned pretty much every month. All next year.
Well, you
just
need
have
to
something on the books where, like, it's a believable excuse where if he drops out of the blue, hey, this is going down June 15th. I'm like, oh, sorry.
Aw, shucks.
Aw, shucks. I got this one planned.
That's my yearly trip to Branson, Missouri.
Yeah, and just details. Just line them up. I love to go, but I've already booked my trip.
Family's coming out. It's going to be a whole thing. I'm sorry.
Heading to the Ozarks. Yeah, going to go off the grid for a while. Nothing I can do. Fake some Instagram photos from the Ozarks. Give me one of them like little cardboard cutouts of me.
Or just know that you're going to take a trip to the Ozarks. And then when he drops the wedding, you know when you're going to the Ozarks. Then book the trip. You got real Instagram photos. You're actually going. Family's all going. You just can't go to the wedding.
I think I'd rather go to Colombia than I would the Ozarks. All right. Full show today, 3 to 7. Plenty of stuff to talk about. The NFL, obviously, there was a ton of news over the weekend. But, hey, week one of college football. Well, week zero was last week. But you know, that was the appetizer. We got the full course. And, you know, if you're a Duck fan, I don't know what to tell you. I don't think I'm going to make you feel any better, but I'm going to try to give you the good of it. I'm going to try to give you the bad. I'm going to try to give you the ugly. So I'm assuming we start right there. And maybe we do some therapy today for, I've already had a couple of Duck fans reach out to me. And it's amazing after one game, how many, I'll bet you I have no less than 12 people that have reached out to me with either their A, hot Duck opinions, or B, it's their hot opinion and then want me to either back that up or give them reason why their hot take needs to be simmered
down. Right, because you're a former football player.
Yeah.
So you're the trustworthy source of Duck opinions.
Yeah.
So what you say this show is official.
It's true. It's like, hey, this is what I saw. What did you think? Like they want to know. And I'm here to just we'll just dive right into it, right? And don't worry, Oregon State, we'll get to you. Although, oh wow,
that hey, the offense is good.
Well, okay, maybe we'll get it. I'll get into Oregon State real quick, and then when we come back, I'll flip the script and we'll go heavy into Oregon.
Okay,
so I think there's a lot more meat on the Oregon bone, unfortunately, than there is on the Oregon State side of things. First off, let me just say this: I tried watching the Oregon State game at a bar. I ended up on my own on Friday night. No one was around. House was empty. Special lady friend was off seeing a concert with some friends. Kids were all gone. So I was like, oh, all right. It's bar time, right? So I go to sit down, and I wanted to just sit. And then there's not many halfway decent bars over by where I live, but there's one that's pretty nice. So I went, and I just wanted to sat down and watch it. Had myself got myself an old fashioned, had myself a nice little burger, and was going to be just a fine little evening, me and Oregon State. And some douche canoe behind me was going on a political rant. He was in the political rant, whether he was pro or anti Trump, it doesn't matter. Okay. He would not stop yelling. And I'm not in any way exaggerating this story for the sake of radio. He was yelling for 25 plus minutes at some point, and he wouldn't stop. Just tariffs, and the Chinese, and it was mind numbing.
Sounds like really riveting Friday night bar conversation for all the patrons.
At some point, I asked the bartender, I'm like, hey, can we do something about this? And he goes, ah, man, this guy comes in here from time to time, and like he gets pretty worked up. And I was like, can we not like give him the heave-ho? And he's like, well, you know, we've been kind of told to just kind of let him be. And I wanted to turn around and say something, but at that point, I'm like, dude, this guy's looking for someone to say something to him.
Right? Of course he is. That's why he's yelling at the top of his lungs.
That's why he is yelling. And the poor guy that he was with, I don't think I heard two words from that guy. And quarter and a half in, I just couldn't take it anymore. I paid my check, and I was like, this is ridiculous.
Well, at about that time, that's when Oregon State stopped scoring to keep up with Oklahoma State. So you got a good amount of game to watch there.
Bingo. It was right about then where I was like, you know what? Because early on, I was like, hey, you know what? Go Beavs.
Back and forth. Offense looked good.
Hodgins is a beast. Luton had it going a little bit.
Jamar Jefferson wasn't a fluke last year. Like, no. Look at this. This is great.
And I will say this. This is exactly what we thought Oregon State's offense was going to be. And the defense is much, much worse. Like, I thought the defense was going to be better. I just kept hearing that some of the transfers that they had, the defensive line was going to be improved, that the secondary was going to be better, that this was going to be a better unit as a whole. And we knew it wasn't going to be great, but we thought it was going to be better. And to quote Denny Green, what was the actual quote?
They are who we thought they were.
There you go.
They are who we thought they were.
Offensively, Oregon State's going to score some points and going to give some people some problems. And defensively, it's a nightmare.
I haven't seen worse angles taken on defense tackling in a very long time.
No, it's the same thing. You can't get off blocks. It doesn't matter if you try to bring pressure because you don't have the back half to hold up in coverage. It's just bad.
How many screen passes did Oklahoma State complete that wound up being 30 or 40 yard gains because they couldn't tackle?
You can't tackle, poor angles, can't get off blocks. There's no cover. It's just bad. It's just bad, bad, bad football. And I don't know if it's entirely coaching. Again, from what I saw, now to be fair, Oklahoma State's a good offense, right? I get it that they got a new offensive coordinator and they were trying to figure out the quarterback situation. Oklahoma State year in and year out puts up points.
Might be one of the best offenses you see all year.
It's a good offense. Yeah. I mean, it's like Washington State, right? If you didn't see Washington State, it honestly, at this point, it doesn't matter who they roll out there. You know Gundy, you know Leach, they're going to put up points. So if you want one positive from that, it's that you're right. Maybe there's not many offenses they're going to see like that. But from a personnel standpoint, it didn't appear much different. And so it's only week one. Don't overreact. I still think Oregon State's going to be in a lot of games because I do think their offense, especially against some of the Pac-12 opponents, are going to score points. Even a couple of times that they got stopped, they just batted down balls. There was one third down in the first half where the left tackle actually made a nice play and cut the defensive lineman, got him down to the ground, and he got up and still got a paw on it. Right, I think the offense is going to score points. I think they're going to score 30 points a game in the Pac-12. I just don't know how many they're going to give up.
They might give up 45, 50 a game.
It's bad. So for at least week one, overreaction, Oregon State, kind of what we thought, at least from the offensive side of things. And then defense was a little disappointed. So fingers crossed that gets a little better. Now on the Oregon side of things, when we come back, we'll dive into it. No one freak out. It's only week one. No excuse for losing that game. None whatsoever. You were the better football team and you let that one get away. We get into Oregon Auburn. We come back primetime here on a Labor Day edition.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back in. A Labor Day edition of Prime Time here, talking a little Oregon-Auburn. Look, it was the marquee game of the weekend. Drew the biggest national rating. I think it almost had a 5 share from what I saw on the overnight. So it was by far the most watched game. And unfortunately, that's going to be the one that people remember. I don't know how many conferences necessarily had a good weekend. I think the ACC had 9 teams lose, including Florida State, that somehow bungled away a double-digit lead against Boise State. They were dominating Boise State, and they absolutely S'd the bed in the second half. In fact, I think Florida State got shut out and didn't do anything. So it wasn't as if, like a lot of conferences, SEC had a horrible one. They had 4 bad losses. The Pac-12 certainly didn't look good either. But unfortunately, from a national perspective, the one that you needed to win, because at this point, we all know that conference, your reputation is only, it's built upon 2 or 3 teams, right? The ACC is warmed over garbage. It's the worst conference of the Power 5. But no one talks about it because you have Clemson, right? Clemson holds everything up. The Big Ten is held up by Michigan and Ohio State. And right now, you need someone from the Pac-12 to lift you up. And your big three, we would assume, would be Oregon, Washington, maybe Utah. That to me looks like the three, and you could throw Washington State in there. I think people are sleeping on Washington State. They look good, although
as per usual,
they didn't play anyone. But Washington State, from a national standpoint, isn't going to get a lot of credit. They didn't last year. I thought they should have been in the conversation for the College Football Playoff, and they weren't. And then obviously, you know, the Apple Cup didn't matter anyways. They were dismissed by Washington. But on a national stage, you had the number 11 team in the country go down and play what I think is a good, not great Auburn team. And I'll go out on a limb. I'll bet you Auburn loses 3 to 4 games this year easy. Like the narrative after that game is going to be that Bo Nix is some sort of great quarterback. This is my hot take, and I'm not a big hot take guy. Bo Nix sucks. He's a freshman, and he can get better. Bo Nix is not a good quarterback. Nothing he did until that final drive impressed me at all. I didn't think he looked poised. I didn't think it looked like he had a great arm. He wasn't fitting the ball into tight windows. None of it. He had a great scramble on fourth down where he got the first down by 0.5 yard, or we're not talking about it. The play to the sideline that he had in that drive, the guy was wide open and he had time to throw. And then it was a 1-on-1 matchup on the outside where he threw the touchdown pass, and Auburn just had a bigger, stronger guy that went up and got the ball. And
who,
by the way,
it was bobbled. It was knocked out of his hands and he came down with it.
Well, and it was grossly underthrown. And I love how on the broadcast, I thought it was embarrassing how they kept trying to make Nix into something that he wasn't. He didn't mean to underthrow that ball. He'd been underthrowing people all game long. That touchdown actually happened because it was a crappy throw. Like that, he just underthrew it, and the Auburn guy, you know, I don't remember what receiver it was, actually just happened to be there and turn around, and that put the Oregon guy, it was McKinney, in bad position. But it wasn't a great throw. It was like the 2 picks he had. The one down there at the end of the half was a horrific underthrow. Nix was underthrowing people all game long, and yet I heard some people being like, ah, the next great SEC quarterback, and the guts to lead that. I mean, I give him credit, right? You went down and you drove down and you made plays to win that game. But God, let's not make Bo Nix out to be the second coming, and the idea that he somehow outplayed Justin Herbert. Boy, I couldn't disagree with that anymore. Yeah. And Auburn is going to lose football games this year, plenty of them.
I think that makes it worse for Ducks fans is the fact that Bo Nix was bad.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to say he sucks. I can't judge him off one game, but he did not play well in the first game. He was not ready as a true freshman to come in and lead Auburn against a ranked team. He was not ready.
No.
And yet, of course, he gets that one drive at the end. And the one that I saw was the beginning of a legend. I was like, what?
Stop.
He did one drive. Good drive, and that was it.
They won the game. They were able to run the ball, which I'm a little surprised that the running numbers were so lopsided. I think Oregon only ran the ball for 90-something yards, which was a bit disappointing. I'm looking here.
I think Verdell had 70-some, and then Dye had maybe 30 or 40.
33 rushing attempts, 2.7 yards per carry, 90 yards rushing. Auburn on the other side, 43 rushing attempts for 206, basically a five-yard clip.
And they couldn't rush in the first half. And then the second half, they
wore you down.
They were saying they were looking for the guy who was hot. They had like four running backs who they were kind of rotating, and they found him in the second half.
Yeah, was it the Withlow? I think was the number 28.
He got super winded multiple times, but was still a tank out there.
Yeah, he had 24 for 110, and physically, I think Oregon wore down on defense, which can happen. And then I think offensively, I think you got conservative, and it just went south on you. But it should have never been to that point. Oregon was a better team than Auburn. I honestly thought that was going to be a blowout in the first half. When I was watching Oregon, I thought Oregon had the more talented quarterback. I thought they were running the ball at will down on Auburn. I thought Auburn looked frazzled on offense. I thought they were trying to go tempo and they weren't prepared for it. I thought Oregon's defense was suffocating and was giving Nick's problem. That should have been 28-3 before you blinked, and Auburn shouldn't have been in that football game. But unfortunately, Oregon shot themselves in the foot time and time and time again, and they allowed Auburn to hang around. And midway through the third quarter, right, you just had that sense of, God, when one team is playing that much better than the other, and yet the score doesn't indicate it, that always makes me a little bit nervous. And you could just feel Oregon, to me, start to pucker, I think, from a play-calling standpoint. I think from an execution standpoint. And then physically, I think they started to get worn down. But think about it. You had the drop pass in the back of the end zone, right? You had the fumble at the mesh point going in.
You had the missed field goal after the drop pass.
Missed field goal afterwards. And to give credit to the defense, after two huge mistakes, including the Auburn running the fumble back, Oregon held.
They did.
Oregon's defense held. They did everything you could want. They held Auburn to two field goals after being put in awful situations, and it still wasn't enough for you. So that's the part to me, if I'm an Oregon fan, that absolutely just frustrates the hell out of me, is you had every opportunity to put that game away. So to me, the game wasn't won and lost on fourth and one. It wasn't lost by being conservative towards the end. It wasn't lost with not running more clock. And I get it, you know, clock management, you know, bleed the clock out. You were snapping the ball with, you know, 11, 12, sometimes 16 seconds left.
They wasted multiple timeouts.
You know, the game to me wasn't lost at that point. The game was lost in missed opportunities earlier in the game when you had a chance to put that thing away and bury Auburn. And you didn't. You allowed them to hang around because of your own mistakes. And then towards the end, I did think that there was a pucker factor. And unfortunately for Oregon, I'm not going to say it's like a full-on trend, but to me, when I look at execution down the stretch, when I look at halftime adjustments, whether that be against Stanford, whether that be with Washington State, whether that's now at Auburn, whether that was your game plan against Utah and Arizona, this to me is a really talented team that is going to win a lot of games. That's the positive to take out of this, that Oregon physically, to me, looked like the better team than Auburn. And I was surprised by that. I thought Oregon was the better team going in, but I just think from a speed, from a physicality standpoint, through 2.5, even three quarters, I thought Oregon was the better team. That's going to win you a lot of games. Unfortunately, this is starting to become problematic. We're now over two seasons. We have multiple games you can point to and say there's no excuse for winning that game or no excuse for losing that game. And if Washington doesn't miss a field goal, you don't even have that big win. Your big signature win came because Washington shanked a field goal. And so that to me is the concern. And not that that is anything that needs to be freaked out. You're one season and one game in. But I do think there's enough of those to where you're at least starting to have a bit of a question mark about whether or not the execution and the coaching is good enough down the stretch, especially against good teams. This reminded me very much of Stanford, where you dominated a half of football and then you did nothing in the second half. You had one drive in the second half, and that was to start, where again, you went right down the field. And then after that, offensively, you did nothing.
To me, that whole thing that you're bringing up all comes down to coaching and all comes down to, I think, the conservative play calling in the second half. I don't know if it's a crystal ball decision. I don't know if it's an Arroyo decision, but it feels like the Ducks play not to lose when they have a lead rather than playing to win or put their foot on the other team's throat to try to extend the game. How many times in the second half of the game 2 days ago now, this weekend, did they do the same play two straight times or in a drive, right? Verdell up the middle or the little Jalen Redd out route that they did a bunch of times that eventually started getting stopped. It was vanilla conservative, whereas in the first half, I thought the play calling was actually really good.
Yeah.
I was really impressed by the varying play calling on offense. I felt like they really used all their weapons effectively. I know they didn't have all their healthy receivers, but they made do and made good passes to guys who were open. You had, sure, you had Addison drop the ball, but that's a freshman that you don't expect to contribute. And then you had, who was the really big tall guy? I forget his
name. Spencer Webb.
Spencer Webb.
The tight end went out and made a great play.
Who made the great catch and then stepped over the Auburn defender.
Yeah.
You had guys who you weren't expecting to contribute because you had good play calls. And then it all stopped.
Yeah, minus the drop in the end zone. I actually thought for what you had, the receivers played pretty well. But when we come back, I know we're up against it. I want to talk about that because I do think that the receiver thing was an issue, but not in the way most people are talking about. So we'll talk about that and the idea of being conservative even when throwing the football. Because I think there was an alarming number to me that jumped out. Because Justin Herbert was good. I mean, you can't look at his numbers and say that he was bad. But if you want to talk about getting conservative, people are going to talk about the run game. I'll talk about getting conservative in the pass game. That when we come back. Here, though, Lynch with SportsCenter.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back in. Talking a little Oregon football. You can text us at the Better You Today text line 55305. Chris Ball talks a lot about being prepared, calling timeouts before the game started, and blowing multiple timeouts during the game didn't match up with his speech about preparation. Certainly, I don't think that was a good look either time. You know, take your pick. A lot of people, by the way, chiming in with, what did so many people say about Cristobal when he was hired? Great recruiter, great motivator, sets a great culture, but lousy as X's and O's, lousy as a game coach. And I think that is kind of a sentiment that is starting to take hold. And again, I think that's too early to say that. You're one season in and now one game. But clearly he is not a...
You're using the games in front of you to make that judgment.
Exactly. Though. But so. All I would say is be careful making sweeping statements. But... Cristobal is not a game coach because he's not a play caller. He is a CEO type football coach, right? Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, if something's wrong with the offense, you can blame Lincoln Riley. Washington State, that's Mike Leach, Gundy down there, right? But to say that this is Cristobal's fault, now you can say that he's in charge. He's the one that makes the decisions as far as hiring someone, firing someone.
He could tell... the coordinators, hey, I want to be conservative here to protect the lead.
Exactly. So you don't, I think that one of the easiest things in the world to do apparently is to call plays because everyone has the magic bullet. I always be careful criticizing play calling because you're not there, right? You're not watching the all 22 cut up of the game. You don't know what the game plan is. You don't know what your limitations are. So you do have to be careful with that. I've been on record saying that I've always been suspicious of Marcus Arroyo. And I think you saw what Avalos did for Oregon's defense. I thought Oregon's defense was great.
In one game, you saw the massive change.
Yes. I thought you saw what Boise State did. Multiple looks, confusing a team, bringing pressure. Even when you weren't bringing blitzes, that's not true. When you were only rushing four or five, they were coming from different angles, and they were confusing a veteran Auburn offensive line. I thought you could see the difference. I think if you look down at Florida State, you could see what a difference that Kendall Briles made at Florida State. I thought their offense looked better. Well, at least in the first half against Boise. So I'm still of the belief that I think you need an upgrade at that offensive coordinator position. But Cristobal obviously likes Marcus Arroyo, right? The change didn't come last year after 1 year.
He is a great recruiter.
And it's not going to come this year. So all this talk of get rid of the coaching staff, that's ridiculous. That's an overreaction to one game. The physical talent you have is going to win you a lot of games. I still think Oregon and UW are the two best teams in the Pac-12. We'll see what happens. You know, Utah, Washington State, there's no gimmies here. But from a physical standpoint, I liked everything I saw about Oregon, right? They are building something good. down there in Eugene. But against this level of competition, and as the season wears on, is the coaching going to be good enough? And that's a question that I think that you, to be fair, you need to wait and see and let it play out. I'm not ready to make one sweeping statement. I saw Dan Orlovsky, who is quickly becoming to me one of the best analysts in the game. He was talking about this, and he said when he went back and looked at the Oregon film, and this comes down to maybe you're just being so shorthanded. He said on every one of Justin Herbert's completion, and I think there was 28 of them.
Ooh, I saw this tweet. Yeah.
Yeah. He was 28 of 37, only two times. And he's taken away the little, you know, the 3 and 4
yard, Jalen Red out route,
the Jalen Red out routes and the little bubble screen stuff. That only two times were his receivers open. Two times
in the entire game,
in the entire game. Auburn just played man coverage against Oregon the entire time. And this goes back to an adjustment. I think this is why you saw Auburn put the clamps down as the game wore on. They realized that no one from Oregon could beat them. They were not afraid of getting beat deep. And all that cushion that they had early in the game went away. They played man. They sucked up. They stacked the box and said, you're not going to run against us. And we don't trust that you can throw the ball over the top. And they were right, because Oregon didn't. Of those 28 passes, and this is where I go back to the everyone's going to criticize Oregon for being conservative and bleeding clock and trying to run the ball. To me, I would get more offended if I was an Oregon fan with the conservative nature of throwing the ball downfield. Of Justin Herbert's 28 completed passes, six of them went beyond 10 yards. Six.
Yeah.
Bo Nix completed 13 passes. He had seven of them. Went beyond 10 yards. Everything you did was underneath. Everything. And Auburn figured it out and said, you will not run the ball. And Oregon's run game disappeared. Auburn started slanting into it. They started bringing safeties up and said, you will not run. And Oregon's offensive line early on, I thought was bullies. That offensive line is good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so, and that's the other one.
And Auburn's defensive line is supposed to be
one of the best,
one of, if not the best in the country.
And this is why I say for Oregon fan, don't freak out that offensive line in that run game, because I do think you have good backs. They run hard, and you've got three or four different ones that all give you different looks. That run game and that offensive line is going to win you a lot of games in the Pac-12. If you watch Penei Sewell, that guy is a first round NFL pick. That guy is a beast. And just
across, and he's a sophomore.
Across the board, your offensive line is really good. But when you've got Auburn playing downhill and slanting into things, it's hard to run against certain fronts. But if you are going to do that against Oregon, Oregon has to be able to beat you over the top. But if everything you're doing is 3 and 4 yard pass routes, and everything you're doing is running into stacked fronts, you end up with an offense that goes nowhere. And that's what you had in the second half. You have an offense that went nowhere.
And the thing for me is, a lot of people are blaming the coaches, but a lot of people are blaming Justin Herbert, saying he's not a good enough quarterback. He's way overhyped and all that kind of stuff. And I don't believe that for a second. Watching the game in the first half, when the play calling was a little bit better, or a lot of bit better, how many perfect tight window throws did he make to his receivers that nobody else but his receiver could catch? It felt like every throw downfield was exactly where it needed to be for his receiver only. To me, that speaks volumes about how good Justin Herbert is at quarterback.
He was 28 of 37 for 242 with no picks. I don't know how anyone wants to tear that kid apart.
Because I think they're trying to find a reason why Oregon keeps losing these big games. And I agree with you. It's Justin Herbert didn't play well in the second half comparatively, because the play calls in front of him didn't allow him to play well. And the great stat from Dan Orlovsky, nobody was open anyway.
No one's open. There's just nowhere to throw the ball. I'd still like, and that word to me goes back to, you got to be creative and able to get people open. That's where the scheme has to be able to help you out. But it's also where you're probably limited in the fact that you are literally down, what, five guys that would be playing big minutes on the outside. So I think if you want to point to where the receivers ended up hurting you, it's that. I thought the guys you had played really well. And I think at times, but Auburn made adjustments, and I don't think Oregon was able to make an adjustment back. And once Auburn figured out that they weren't going to get beat deep, and then they started loading up on the run game, I think that to me was the ball game. But we're getting all these texts in, the Oregon run game is trash. That's ridiculous.
I'm also seeing Herbert fumbled the game away. That fumble wasn't even on Herbert.
No, that one, but that one hurts, right? You've got a senior quarterback. You've got a back that you think you can rely upon. You can't have those mistakes.
They also didn't give up a touchdown on that drive
either. No, they
didn't.
But, you know, and that's where I give the defense credit. The defense on two times were put in horrific situations. And how about Addison, by the way, running that kid down? I mean, holy hell.
Yeah.
Dude, that's the play of the game, although you ended up losing anyways. But that's a great effort to run that down. And then the defense holding Auburn to a field goal there. But this idea that somehow the offensive line is trash, the run game's trash, Herbert's trash, that's where I'm saying that we're making these sweeping statements that are just not correct. That is a very good football team. That's not Alabama. That's not Clemson. And I think you found out that you're far away from that truly upper echelon. But I think Auburn's a good team. I think Auburn is as good as most of the teams that you're going to play. I'm not certain that Auburn is better than UW. I'm not certain that Auburn is a stiffer challenge than what Utah will give you. I think Auburn offensively was bad. I do. But from a defensive standpoint, that's a good team. And I think Oregon had a chance to put up 35 plus points and they didn't. Self-inflicted wounds. So while it is disappointing, obviously, that you came up with a result that you didn't want, I think those things are easily cleaned up. I think that if the receiving core can get healthy, I think a lot of those things are going to take care of themselves. And this offense is going to be good. And on the other side of the ball, I think you've got a chance to be really good defensively.
And Juwan Johnson as a late scratch obviously didn't help
either. No, that didn't help.
Everyone thought he was back playing, and then you see the pictures of him in sweats, you go, uh-oh.
And you were out with and you didn't have one of your tight ends. I mean, look, there was a lot of guys out there that you were counting on that weren't there. So I think Oregon is going to be okay, but I think you found out you were further away from quote being back than maybe you thought. And the one that stings about that is there, to me, there was no excuse in losing that game. I said that going in, that I thought you were the better team, and you can't convince me that Auburn was better than Oregon other than on the scoreboard. I know that sounds like a funny thing because obviously give Auburn credit. They made plays and Oregon didn't. I just think that one was as much Oregon losing that game as it was Auburn winning it, and that stings because when you get those opportunities on national stages to make statement games, you got to find a way to get it done. And for whatever reason, Oregon wasn't able to do it, and it wasn't one thing, it was a handful of things. But you got to be careful, otherwise this becomes a trend and this is what you become known for. And it reminded me of Stanford all over again. All right, we come back, we'll get into some more kind of X's and O's details when we talk a little Oregon Auburn when we come back. Primetime here on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Kind of putting a bow on our Ducks coverage here. Start of the 4 o'clock hour, we'll kind of take a little trip around the rest of the Pac-12, some general thoughts on college football as we just finished up week one. I don't think, to me, there were any massive surprises at the top. I think the top proved that they're indeed that good. I think where you saw it was a lot of middle of the road to average teams who people said, oh, well, this is going to be a bounce back year. And well, no, it's not going to be a bounce back year, at least what we've seen from week one. But I don't know of anyone that was near the top to me that disappointed at all. I don't know if anyone really had a marquee win because no one played anyone, but the Oklahomas and the Georgias and the LSUs, the Alabamas, the Clemsons of the world, they looked just fine.
I think the only question that people had was, after the first quarter, Ohio State kind of just stopped scoring.
Yeah.
And that was the only worry was, hey, wait a minute. They were up 28-0 in the first quarter, and then they won 45-21, so they still won big, but all of a sudden it slowed down. That was the only thing I saw as a question of whether or not a top team was rated in the right spot.
Yeah, Justin Fields looked really good, and Jalen Hurts at Oklahoma. God, if I'm a quarterback, sign me up to play for Lincoln Riley.
Quarterback who wants to transfer, go play for Lincoln Riley right now.
We'll talk about it, but if you haven't seen people doing detailed breakdowns, some of the stuff that they're doing in their offense is game-changing. I saw a great detailed breakdown of everyone doing RPOs, run-pass options. They're doing PROs, pass-run options. Some of the looks they're giving defenses, I have no idea how you defend them.
I also saw one that I saw today was a triple option fake counter by Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
That led to basically the entire left side being open, if not for a missed block.
Just gashing people.
Yep.
Just absolutely gashing them and just, you know, from a scheme standpoint, receivers running wide open. And that's where I think, to me, Oregon lacks is from a scheme standpoint. I don't think from a schematic standpoint on the offensive side of the ball, they do their players any favors. And that, to me, right now is their biggest weakness. And people are giving me a hard time saying, well, how can Oregon be the better team and lose? Better teams lose all the time.
Happens all the time.
Happens all the time. You don't execute, right? You don't make adjustments. You end up getting beat. Oregon got beat fair and square. But to me, the more talented, the more dynamic team was Oregon. I think if you play that game 10 times, to me, Oregon wins 8 or 9 of them. I think Auburn was very, very lucky to win that game. And I think as the season rolls on, Auburn will get better. But I think from an offensive standpoint with Bo Nix, that's not a very good offense. And I do think that the depth and the physicality of Auburn eventually started to wear Oregon down. And I think Oregon ran out of some gas, especially on the defensive end of things towards the end. But even that, I mean, Bo Nix was half a yard on that fourth down play, and we're not talking about this.
I want to ask the question, too, because twice, now this is super like conspiracy theorist of me, but twice, actually back-to-back plays, it felt like the decision was rushed.
Yeah.
So on the Bo Nix 4th and 3, they showed the angle, and you're like, oh, clearly a first down. They showed another angle, and then they showed the side angle, and you go, well, wait a minute. Yeah. It's close. And when they showed that, they already made the decision, and it was first down, and you go, well,
it's got
it was close, but
they already ruled it a first down, so you have to have indisputable evidence, and it wasn't.
Right.
It was bang, bang.
I agree. It was indisputable. It would have been a first down, but it was way closer than at least the broadcast made it seem. Sure. They're like, clearly a first down.
It was right there.
And then on the very next play, they did the terrible play call of the running back draw, and he lost like 4 yards, and yet it was 2nd and 10. It was just those two plays back to back. I went, what is happening here? Oregon's defense needs to make a stop, and yet they can't seem to catch that little lucky break there. It should have been 2nd and 14, I thought, and it was 2nd and 10.
The Oregon defense, that was a bad drive. They allowed Auburn to go down and make plays. Other than that, I thought the Oregon defense played really well.
Even on that drive, they had good plays, though.
They had it. It was, you know, the defense couldn't come up with one extra play. But what I keep seeing on the Bet You Today text line and what I'm hearing from people is people wanting to rag on the Oregon run game. And I think it's easy sometimes if you're not watching kind of the behind the scenes stuff. Oregon gashed them in the first half. I thought the Oregon run game looked like offensive line porn at the beginning of that. I mean, it was a clinic. They were absolutely gashing Auburn in those first couple drives running the football. Even when they got down to the goal line, right? Then when they ran to the left-hand side, I mean, that was a walk-in touchdown. Right. The play that Herbert
Sewell just like shoved a linebacker 6 feet under immediately. Yeah.
Sewell, Lemieux, and Jake Hansen. Give me those three on the left side over maybe anyone in the country. And on the play where Herbert ended up with the fumble, dude, that would have been wide open too. Just, you know, it's a bad break. But again, those are plays that I get it. You can't have those. With a senior quarterback and a dominant offensive line, you have to be better than that in those moments. But this idea that the Oregon run game is trash, this is where people are completely ass backwards on this. But I think, to me, what happened in the run game, if you go and watch as the game progressed, and we talked about it a little bit, this is where the passing game has to be able to bail out the run game, right? This idea that one exists without the other is it's a false narrative. You know, it's like you can either throw to set up the run, you can run to set up the pass. But if you become one dimensional, I don't care how good that one dimension is, it's hard against a good team. And Auburn has a good defense, plain and simple. That is, UW and Utah are going to run defenses at you like that. I think to say that Auburn is the best defense you're going to see, I don't know. UW and Utah.
It's the best defensive line you're going to see.
It's the best defensive line you're going to see. I think from a secondary standpoint, I think Utah was better than Auburn. And that could be an issue because your receivers couldn't do anything against Auburn secondary. But when people ask what happened to the run game, even on that 4th and half a yard, right? First off, I don't understand why in 4th and half a yard you have your tailback's heels at 9 yards deep in the backfield. But
after 2 timeouts, mind you. On the same play, made that decision to have him line up in the pistol
yep.
and need to gain 10 yards, not just like 4 yards.
Don't understand that, but some of that is...
Or one if you want to go quarterback sneak.
Some of that is the painful nature of playing in the gun, right? People criticize that all the time. You get into short yardage, it's a deficiency. But everyone and their mother knew that you were going to run to the left-hand side. I mean, everyone. And some of that is this idea that we're going to be tough and our best is going to stop your best. But when Auburn slants into the run, taking away the cutback lane, and you've got Auburn shooting gaps, that's not Oregon's offensive line's fault.
The second the ball was snapped, Auburn was over Oregon's offensive line and into the backfield. The second it was snapped, it was even before you handed it off in the pistol, it was over. Yeah. The play was over.
So, I mean, I understand this idea of we're going to be tougher than you, but in that play call, there was nothing that anyone was going to do that was going to block what Auburn did.
Well, and then in that exact example right there, wouldn't that be on Arroyo to say, hey, everyone and their mother expects us to go left. Let's not go left. Let's fake left because they're all going to slant that way. And then guess what? You're going to have a wide open right side of the field.
Some of us feel that way. But at the same time, if you try to run some quarterback bootleg, you try to run a counter and it gets blown up. You know what we're saying today? What the hell, man? You've got the best left side of the offensive line in the country. Why the hell are you running away from it? And this is why I said criticizing play calling is really tough, right? Everyone has the answer, hindsight being 20-20. Everyone's a visionary. Everyone's Lincoln Riley, right? Marcus Arroyo is not Lincoln Riley. Mm-hmm. He's not one of the better offensive play callers in the country. Is he the worst? I think it's too early to say.
He's putting it nicely, though.
But I do think that as the game wore on, you have to be able to make adjustments. And if I want to point out one thing that Auburn did to win this game in Oregon to lose it, because we've talked about, to me, the mistakes that Oregon made, because they should have been up 28-3, right? That should have never come down to the wire. Oregon had so many opportunities to put away that game.
At least 21-3.
And they didn't do it, right? But if you want one thing, if you want to talk schematics that made a difference, it's when Auburn went to man-to-man coverage, tightened it up, and then just started bringing the house and started shooting gaps. If a defense is going to play like that, you have to be able to make them pay. Because if you have linebackers that are sucking up near the line of scrimmage and defensive linemen that are slanting, two things. Either A, you're going to have guys open over the middle because there's going to be a gap between the linebackers and the safeties, right? If someone wants to play that hard, you have to be able to make them pay, or you have to be able to have a guy on the outside that's going to get one-on-one coverage, and you have to have a receiver that says, my guy can beat your guy one-on-one, and I've got the quarterback to throw him the ball, and Oregon didn't attempt it. I'm trying to think off the top of my head in the second half outside of that first drive, which again looked great. Nice balance, nice mix it up. You went right down the field and scored. And I was like, all right, that's going to be the ball game. That's going to be the sealer. I don't remember one other time that Oregon made an attempt on the boundary to try to have one of their guys win a one-on-one matchup. Maybe they did, but I don't remember it off the top of my head.
I remember a lot of 2-yard runs and a lot of quick passes that were, you know, 2-yard gains. That's what I remember after that drive.
Yeah. And then you have to be able to, you have to be able to make a defense pay. And they never did. Auburn figured something out. And I kept waiting for Oregon to make an adjustment. I kept waiting for Oregon to run away from that. I kept waiting for Oregon to test the boundary, to run outside of the tackles. I kept waiting for Oregon to attack the middle of the field with a tight end or an underneath receiver. I kept waiting for them to take a shot down the field, whether that was outside on the boundary, up in the seam, someone running a post, because Herbert was accurate throwing the ball downfield when he did. But they only did it 6 or 7 times all game. The one where I don't understand. And again, I got to be careful here because I'm not in that huddle. I don't know what they thought of the receivers. I don't know what they thought Auburn was doing. But from my standpoint, I just was scratching my head that Oregon never had a counter for when Auburn made their adjustment there in the second half.
You referencing the Stanford game from last year, it's the perfect comparison because Oregon in the first half, Justin Herbert looked like a number one pick in the NFL in the first half, right? He was pinpoint passes just like he was against Auburn in the first half. You know, down the field, no matter where he was going, it was almost perfect. And it all fell apart in the second half, and everyone blamed the play calling because they got really conservative. And it felt exactly the same in this game. And there's obviously different reasons to why it was conservative or why things weren't working because Auburn made different changes than Stanford did, and obviously different personnel this year too. But it is the same trend.
Yep.
And that is the most alarming to me.
And if you want one thing that you want to point out from a statistic standpoint to me that was scary, 4 of 14 on third down. And if you want to throw any criticism Herbert's way, and I'm going to be a little more protective of him because I think he's taking a lot of crap right now. And I get it. You're a senior quarterback. And I said before the game, no excuse for a senior to lose to a true freshman. I still feel that way. I can't believe you lost to Bo Nix, who just to me wasn't very good, minus that last drive. But if I want to be critical of Herbert on one thing, I do think, especially in the second half, there were multiple times where you had third and four, third and five. And I think Herbert had time to throw the ball, and he wasn't very accurate on third down. I thought there were times that there were some passes that you just have to find a way to make, even with tight coverage, in order to keep the chains moving. 4 of 14 on third down, it's tough. It's tough to win when you're 4 of 14 on third down. And I think in the first half, I want to say they were 2 of 8, and I think he had completed one pass on third down, and that's the money down. Right. If you are going to be considered a Heisman Trophy guy, if you're going to be considered a first round quarterback, at times it's not good enough to be good. And I think Herbert was good. I think Herbert was very good. But if you want to be that guy, you've got to be big on the money down, which is third down. And you have to find a way to lead your team to a victory in a game like that when it's right there on the line. And unfortunately, it didn't happen. And I think I'm still waiting for him to have that signature marquee win. And until he does, I think that monkey is going to sit on his back and understand why people are going to put it there.
Do you think it's strange that, at least this is how it appears from watching from afar, they don't let him change plays at the line of scrimmage?
No, there's not a lot.
I feel like he doesn't make pre-snap reads, or they don't let him change the play based on pre-snap reads.
Not knowing what's going on in the huddle, not knowing what their scheme is. That's why I say you got to be really careful to make sweeping
I just think it's weird
judgments.
That a senior quarterback isn't given that leash.
It doesn't appear that he has that kind of control over
no.
It. All right, we come back. We'll take a broader look around college football. Again, the good, the bad, the ugly from week one. Primetime here on The Fan.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.